Welcome to the Digital Agency Pros Podcast with Andrew McBurney, your host of Digital Agency Pros. In this podcast, we sit down and talk to CEOs, founders, and professionals in the marketing world and talk shop all things related to building an agency and marketing. All right, let's get into it.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode. And today we have Eric Newton from Milestone Internet, where he is the VP of marketing and he is a growth marketing executive who takes a full lifecycle view of customer acquisition, experience, and retention. Prior to Milestone, he was a VP of growth marketing at Bright Edge. Earlier on in his career, he spent 6 years in Japan and earned his MBA there and then started his career at Dentsu, which is an agency in Tokyo. Eric has worked in tech marketing for more than 20 years at Adobe, MP3.com, Netflix, and TiVo. He has also published more than 175 blogs on SEO, and he's an accomplished speaker and wrote a book called Hack the Corporate Fast Track. Welcome to the show, Eric. I'm happy to have you here.
Great to be here with you.
That's quite the experience. You've definitely been in marketing for quite a while, and I'm super curious, what made you write the book and what's the book all about, Hack the Corporate Fast Track?
Yeah, that's a great backstory. When I became a senior director at TiVo, I had a lot of people who were exactly the same age. They were all 32 years old. They were all about 10 years into their career. And they all sort of had similar problems. They were intellectually very developed and they had good education and training, but they sort of lacked something to get them to the senior manager, the director level. And so I was in a lot of one-on-ones with them where I was explaining to a very intelligent person the issue and the solution. And I started to realize that those solutions would be interesting to any young person. And the sooner you got those lessons, like if we all remember back to, not all of our bosses provided us mentoring, but the ones that did, I mean, you and I could probably recount what they told us right now. And I was going to capture all that mentoring I did for a team of 4 or 5 people and put it into the book, essentially for my kids and my nephews and my nieces, so that when they came out of school, this would be like their graduation present would be, here's my book. Here's everything I know to hack the corporate fast track, be more successful, get promoted faster, and get to those high executive incomes in those mid-sized large companies, wherever you're headed in your career. And I captured all that information and mulled it over it takes a long time to finish a book. Took me anyway about 5 years. And then I put it together and I published it. And the reaction from people was, oh my God, this book is so dense. Because it has like 30, 40, 50 different ideas in it. Because I kind of put in everything I had for the first, say, 20 years of my career in management.
Right.
That's how it got started.
That's interesting. Yeah. So, and now, is this book applicable outside of the marketing world? Like, is this literally any young person looking to kind of gain, capture and get into those senior roles? Is it a good fit for them?
Absolutely. It applies across every department, but it is meant for people who are employed by employers. It's not really a book for founders. It's really a book about fitting into your organization, fitting in with your boss, getting along, making your boss successful, and showing the right attitudes, activity, speed, and quality that you need to show to be promoted. It's a different skill set than being an entrepreneur and launching your own company. That's a different book.
Very much so. And there is a lot of crossover when it comes to selling as an entrepreneur, because you need to showcase those attributes to potential customers. Otherwise, they're just going to see you as some person who's just out there doing whatever versus a polished professional who's actually willing to go the distance for their career. But before I got into marketing, I was in the social field, and not corporate, but in the nonprofits, it's structured the exact same way. And that's exactly how you get ahead in that industry, is you have to really sit down. Like, you don't just show up and do a good job. You also have to go that extra mile to make sure that your boss and your boss's boss, their life becomes very easy, so that you eventually become that person who's thought about whenever these new opportunities do pop up.
Right. It's only partially about the work. It's really about empathy. It's about understanding your boss's situation, their boss's situation, because when you get promoted, it's the entire organization is saying, we'd like you to do more. We'd like to pay you more. We'd like to give you more responsibility. But a lot of people need to be on board with that. And if, as a young person, if you're overly focused on work and output, and I do stuff, I do great work and I do it fast, and you're not working on relationships and communication and making other people's lives easier with empathy, which is not an, a skill that's usually well-developed in young people, then they're just not going to see you that way. They're going to see you as a producer, but you might be an IC for a long time. You could be an IC for 20 years.
Yeah, that's really interesting. The thing with empathy too is a lot of people think of empathy in sad situations.
Yeah.
Where it's not. It's an actual emotion you can use on a day-to-day basis. And it's something that is not that hard to pick up on, right? If somebody's having a bad day, what can you do to make that day just a little bit better? Maybe it's just a compliment. Maybe it's picking up something for them, right? There's all kinds of ways you can leverage that strategically to continue to not just perform well, but also get ahead. Cause I love how you separated those two. Cause like some of the best people I think never move ahead because they're so good at their function.
Absolutely. You know, as you're talking, I'm remembering we probably were told this in kindergarten, you know, you got to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes to really understand their situation. And we got told that, but we didn't really do it that much. I think most people don't do it until maybe in their 40s. At least I didn't, like 40, 45 years old or so, that I was like, what is this person's stressors? What are this person's limitations? How can I help them solve this problem quickly? And how can I show them I understand what their issues are? Because that get through the communication even faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like my last like 9-to-5 quote unquote job, I managed a team, but then my boss managed me, right? I was his only direct report, but he was responsible for everything under me, right? And there was so much stuff that I could have just said, oh yeah, here, you take this one, right? Versus looking at it and being like, oh, like he's going out and he's having these high level meetings with the funders. He's getting like raked over the coals over any little screw up across the team. We're all kind of shielded from that, right? And then I think it's easy for an employee to kind of forget that bosses are people too, and they appreciate whenever you look out for them too. So it's like versus where it's almost expected for the boss to be the leader in every case, versus that team member to turn into that leader and look for those opportunities, because that's ultimately who does rise to the top, right?
Yeah. You're describing different chapters in the book you're naturally covering. I call that fortification, that there's people in our lives that make us stronger and there's people in our lives that drain us. And the people that drain you, you end up starting to avoid them. But your boss, you expect your boss to promote you and to mentor you and to guide you and to give you feedback when you mess up. But are you doing anything for your boss? Are you helping are you understanding your boss's weaknesses? Are you filling in those gaps? Are you anticipating what they're going to need with their boss, their next meeting, their next board meeting, whatever that is? And that's fortification. And if you don't do it in both directions, why would you expect your boss to do it for you? Which is almost what you just said. It's very similar.
Well, it puts you in this position too, where whenever that promotion pops up or that new job's created and needs filled or whatever, it means like you've kind of risen to that almost to be a peer to your boss when you're acting that way versus somebody who's just doing what they're told or what they're responsible to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You have the ownership or the responsibility. You're taking on as much responsibility as you can or at the level above. And a lot of that has to do with just understanding what your boss and your division, your department needs to succeed. Do you really understand the OKRs above you? And are you aligned? And did you align the team below you? That alignment is incredibly valuable and emotionally very satisfying for everybody involved because the work just goes more smoothly.
Well, and like as an entrepreneur now and as a manager previous to that, it really makes like our lives easier too, right? And I'm sure you appreciate that whenever anybody who's under you kind of acts in that way, because it ultimately, it means that you have smart, thoughtful, forward-thinking people who typically can proactively solve problems instead of come knocking on your door every single time something happens.
Yeah. Don't just dump a problem on your boss, right? Like you like it's tempting to do, like, I told you this wasn't going to work, and it didn't work. Here it is on fire. I mean, that email always comes back on you, like, and what do you plan to do about it, Mr. Vice President?
Right.
I actually got one of those recently from my CEO. I was like, oh, okay, sorry. I've got a few more ideas. Let me add some bullet points to this.
that's so funny. It is so true. Like, I'm trying to think back to, like, practical examples of when I was in the workforce and areas that, like, I was able to make that happen. And I can think of, again, the last organization I worked for. I moved across the country, got this great paying job, moved in, got in there, and it was a mess. There was me and two other people who held the same position, and both of our bosses, there's two people who held, like, our supervisor position at the time. They were both just totally checked out, totally burnt out. They're both looking for work at elsewhere, no systems, no organization whatsoever, right? And yeah. Then the senior director, very much checked in, very much trying to keep it all together with basically no support, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm a systems person, right? So I walk in, I'm like, there's no checklist. There has to be a checklist, right? So create the checklist, give it to the boss. He ends up giving it out to the team, right? And it's like, within 3 months, I'm now the team lead, right? And it's just because it's like that forward thinking, problem solving. It's like literally solving, like, that was ultimately, that was his job to do that, right? Or maybe my boss's job to do that. But it's like, those are very practical, like, the things you're talking about are very practical and very easy to do. And I don't think it just applies in corporate, like I mentioned, like, that applies in the client world too, right? Like, if you're just passing off problems to your client, like, maybe it's a website redesign, but then you're like, oh, and you have to come up with the content. So go solve that and then come back and talk to us, versus throwing out some solutions, right? Like, even if it's something as simple as, hey, we know maybe it's like, we know you don't have the budget right now if it's a smaller client for the content, but what we'll do is we'll repurpose the existing content and we'll make that work, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true, for sure.
Awesome. So in your role of VP of marketing, what does your typical day-to-day look like?
Well, I manage about 20 different programs and channels and the website and content and research. So my day looks like, it looks like about 20 different things in 20 and 30 minute increments, you know, work on pricing, work on product launches and go to market, and, working on reputation and reviews and thinking about the NPS score. But a lot of what you just said is like, Forrester has this concept of being customer obsessed. Mm. How much do you talk about your customer? Are you talking about your customers by brand name, by personal name? Do you really know their problems, and are you providing solutions, or are you just turning the cranks and cranking out a document, a PowerPoint, an update to a website or something for them? Or are you really, driving towards their business goals? And if you're doing that, then that's co-ownership, and people feel your involvement in that. So I'm trying to shift from my first year and a half in the agency. It's very fast paced. We've got 650 customers, and there's a lot of work to be done. There was a lot of things to kind of fix and catch up on. And now that I've gotten kind of a decent foundational system in place, I'm thinking about strategy. Like, how do we make this better? How do we come up with things with better automation for our team so that we can work on increasingly higher level things and either automate or pass on to junior people on the team the lower level things, so we can figure out more breakthroughs. Mm,
I love that. Automation's a big one. I love, like, we actually just automated a bunch of things to do with the podcast, where it's like, somebody fills out the Google form, then it automatically adds it to Asana, because we know we got to do that later. It's like just really basic stuff through Zapier. You can learn it in an afternoon, but you can save yourself hours and hours of time.
Yeah. We were having a discussion about, should we hire somebody to do a spreadsheet for the summit conference to do the list with all the details for each attendee? I was like, isn't that what Salesforce is for? Just, hook up the APIs. Like, it's a Pardot form. Use the Pardot must be almost already integrated with Salesforce, since it's the same company, and just get me a dashboard, and please do not send me an Excel spreadsheet unless it's just the original upload file, right, that we need to build the campaign with. So we had a long discussion about this. It felt like I was sort of like in a time warp, like it was like 10 or 15 years ago that we're talking about, hey, is there some way to do this in the cloud or online? Like, yeah, that's Salesforce's whole business.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting with so many solutions now, I think people tend to ignore a lot of them. And then all these, or it's like, we'll use one specific solution that might lack a certain feature, or we only use specific features in it. We don't know 80% of the software. There is a massive overload now, and I'd be curious, like within, like you guys are, if I understand correctly, you're a full service marketing agency. Yes. And you pretty much cover the gambit when it comes to services, right? It's like, yes, you'll do website, SEO, local content, you're pretty much all over the place, right?
Right.
So I imagine you guys have a lot of either custom built solutions or software running the show for you, right?
Absolutely. That what we came across 15 years ago, we wanted to do the world's best SEO work, and none of the CMSs out there had the SEO solutions that Milestone needed. Mm. So we built an SEO first CMS, and we started building in the functionality we needed into the interface and into the backend management. And we built that CMS to manage for our customers. But then we realized that for customers that did want to manage in-house, it could also be a product. So we productized the CMS and a lot of things we were doing in SEO, like more recently, about, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, schema markup. And how do you do schema markup? It's, you know, how do you do sophisticated schema markup? It's a lot harder than it looks. Before I joined this company, I tried to hand code it. And, it's a lot of troubleshooting to hand code, you know, one FAQ question. Mm-hmm. And we figured out how to build that into the platform and automate it, and then automate the monitoring, because things change and things get broken. And once you get an error, you lose the gains that you've gotten from doing something like schema markup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so smart. And I think it's a beautiful time to be offering marketing services, because so much of it can either be delivered through either customized solutions or white label solutions, or even non-white label solutions that you just use behind the scenes, like, I don't know, something like SEMrush or Ahrefs. It's the data that comes to life when you start plugging all these things in really saves a lot of time and delivers a lot of value. Now, one thing I'd be curious about, in terms of data and analytics, where does your company get involved in that? Like, I'm sure you're involved at some level, but how deep down that rabbit hole do you go down the analytics rabbit hole with your customers?
Our platform, the Milestone Presence Cloud, has 239 data integration points into the APIs. So we are pulling in primary popular sources like GA and GSC, but a lot of the custom ones that are needed for industry verticals like hospitality or automotive. And we're putting all that data together. We can do, you know, custom reporting, custom dashboards for our customers. So I was actually thinking about the same thing maybe yesterday. And I think what's really differentiated and unique about what we're doing is we're doing the reporting of the advanced techniques like schema, like AMP, like using FAQ and AMP, FAQ and schema in combination. How do you report that on the lift? Because every website had some baseline traffic before you did those techniques. Mm. So in order to observe, you've got to observe the lift, which means you have to subtract out the base. And getting that calculation correct and automated is something we do so that our customers can make the case to their management without downloading something else into a spreadsheet or having to go into the first party applications themselves. That's some of the unique things we're reporting. The other thing we've gotten really interested and really excited about is the growth in local. Now, local has exploded during the pandemic for a couple of different reasons. The first reason was there was a pullback in paid when people went to the stay-at-home order. And at that point, traditional horizontal organic Google search grew quite a bit. But then people started to be looking for very specific things locally, right? They couldn't get very far from their house. So things were very geocentric. And we saw a 50% growth in the channel share of local between January 2020 and the last data I looked at was June 2021. It's the fastest growing channel by far, and it's eating the lunch of a couple of other channels that have pulled back. Now, what that opportunity has, the other way it's evolved is Google invested a lot of time and energy into updating Google My Business and local search. And for a couple of reasons, probably it was good for Google's business. It was good to support the small business who needed businesses who needed to get deliveries and, you know, he needed to jump into e-commerce if they weren't in it already. So it made sense for those reasons. And all this traffic has shifted over there. And so what's happened is there's been an explosion of the number of tactics and techniques. There's 15 different things to optimize in your GMB profile alone now. And we're, you know, rather than talking about NAP, which is name, address, and place, or UNAP, URL, name, address, and place, which was a traditional way to think about local and listings, is that you're optimizing your local presence via GMB so that your knowledge panel and all these other that your footprint looks really good to Google, and you're getting even more traffic. Like, for example, like Google Plus is sort of integrated into Google My Business now. For most industries, you can be posting, you can post, you know, like you would in Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter on Google My Business, and Google likes to, you know, Google surfaces that content for you. You've got Q&A, you've got questions and answers in GMB. So we see just this huge opportunity, and now local is now 1/3 of the total of local and organic search combined. This is some research I'm just about putting the finishing touches on that I'm published probably next week on the website, and we'll be doing a little bit of press. Maybe I'll send you a copy if you want to take a preview look at it.
Andrew. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's so interesting, and I love how you were able to pick up on that local search trend, because even now I still find myself Googling things before I leave the house because I'm like, are they even open? Like, have their hours changed? Like, and yeah, it is definitely a really, really big thing. Whenever going into the pandemic, when there was a lot of uncertainty before things shut down, it was interesting talking to people in marketing and seeing how their clients were reacting. And it, before the forced shutdowns occurred, some people kind of saw the writing on the wall, and it was always interesting to see how people could pivot and kind of go that step further to serve people where new needs emerged, right? And it sounds that's exactly what you did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been told to invest into a downturn. If you've got the liquidity and if you've got the resources, yeah, for example, paid advertising got so inexpensive, the prices dropped like 50, 60, 70%. And so you could go and get a nice ROI in paid where you might not have before when it was more competitive. That was an opportunity as long as your business was still open, you know, as long as you still had something to advertise and to pull people towards and to transact with.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's really interesting. Were you guys sitting on any clients that their sales spiked? Like, we always joke about toilet paper, for example, but there's like supplements was a really big one, in-home fitness equipment. Like, there's a lot of industries that just skyrocketed once all this happened. Did you guys see any of that? And how did you kind of react or manage those processes?
Yeah, I don't know that we saw anything really that jumped the way, say, Zoom did or something that something that was like tailor made for it. We had some cruise ships that went the other, you know, cruise lines and stuff that were really suffering with shutdown. But what we saw was that our B2B clients were largely unaffected. It was kind of weird, like B2B people just went home and they kept, you know, it took a week or two to settle in. And then everybody was like, okay, I can work and I don't even have to drive to work. I've got more time to talk to vendors. It was actually a little bit easier to get people on the phone if they were in that mode where their life hadn't been disrupted to the point where their income was, you know, damaged and that they still had their livelihood. So B2B tech was a category that chugged along. Financial services was initially very disrupted, and like we've got a big U.S. bank, a big bank that has 5,000 branches, and they had to let people. The branch hours were kind of different in each one, so there was a lot of updating for them to do for that use case you just mentioned about. Hey, is that thing open? Should I bother driving over there? You know, can I go talk to somebody? But obviously, anybody who's in e-commerce, everything on the Shopify platform, where you know. And they were able to help people move to e-commerce was certainly growth if they hadn't been doing much e-commerce before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of companies are going to see a long-term net positive out of all the turmoil and destruction that's kind of come of this, where they're going to come out, or they've already come out on the other side of kind of the adapting to the kind of the new circumstances in a much stronger position, in the sense that they're now digital, whereas before maybe they weren't.
Yeah, that's digital transformation. And the initial data for the first like 9 months of the pandemic was that we had moved forward in digital transformation by about 5 years in less than one. So what we were thinking we're gonna be in 2025, 26, we started seeing in 2020. And that meant like percent of the business that's gonna be digital, percent of transactions that are gonna be online, people that are finding you online, digital marketing, virtual events, podcasts, I think exploded. I think podcasts suffer a little bit from less car travel, but I know that the category seems to, everybody seems way more interested in podcasts since the pandemic than say blogs the year before.
Mm, yeah, definitely. Like, this is obviously an isolated case and not a good example, or not a great example to prove your point, but like my grandmother got a cell phone since this all happened.
Yeah.
She doesn't know how to use any of that stuff, right? Like, she's never owned a computer, never owned a smartphone, like none of that, right? And through all this, like, she now knows how to do that stuff because she doesn't have that like everyday in-person interaction anymore. It's it is really interesting to see how it has impacted so much of the fabric of so many different countries.
Yeah, and Zoom itself, right? Like all for all of our grandparents that are, you know, remote from us. And my mother became the Zoom coordinator for every club at her retirement community. Mm. And you know, every book club, she had the only paid membership. So she was the only one who could get the longer meetings and stuff. So she's quite the central figure and in her community with that technology boost.
I love that. That's awesome. Now you mentioned you oversee, I think it was about 20 different products. Do you also oversee teams within the agency?
Yeah, I've got the marketing team. So I've got the demand team, the communications team, the website team. It's five guys total on my direct team, but then I've got dotted lines to all the solution on the, in our company, we have 16 products and solutions. So about roughly eight products, eight solutions. And we have to have a lot of deep interaction with those teams. And we have 270 people in the company, and we have over 100 of them are engineers. So we do a lot of development. And then there's a lot of people in centers of excellence, development and design, and a lot of people doing product packaging, getting it over to us so that we can do product marketing, price it and take it to market. So, you know, as the division leader in marketing, I work with almost everybody. You know, people reach out to me at all levels of the company. Somebody reached out to me and said, hey, we've got this problem on, you know, the way the price of the bandwidth went up and we need to solve this. You know, what do you recommend? I'm like, well, okay, let's do this for renewals and so forth. And so I like that anybody would reach out to me. You know, Teams, I think, is one of my favorite new applications during the pandemic. We have a lot of people who are not in the United States. So the Teams has been a great way to communicate, and you feel so close to people, especially if you turn on the video cameras. But it also makes it really easy to reach out to people, even if you know they're in a meeting, as long as, you know, kind of check and see if they're not talking, and then you pop over a question, you get an answer. And I think it helps to flatten out the org and give people access. So, how many teams do I have? You know, how many divisions and departments do we have? They're all my teams, right? We're all working for, you know, what makes our customers give us the high NPS score and give us the review.
Yeah, I love that. And is that ultimately what you're tracking in marketing, is like you're monitoring that NPS score?
So NPS technically is the OKR of the CS group, but I'm really, really interested in it because I think it's a great indicator of company health and system health. So I love that. I've got a lot of OKRs. I think I've got like 12 sections and maybe three or four KPIs under each. MQLs, right? I'm supposed to be generating leads. I manage analyst relations, which has been super interesting, really fascinating. We work with Forrester and they've been a great partner so far. And I'm investing a couple hours a week in meetings and prep. And then I've got to evangelize the learnings and the opportunities within the organization. So it's probably my most cross-functional, potentially my most cross-functional program is AR. I'm responsible for PR, and I've got good content, but I haven't gotten my system for getting distribution and pickup down yet, but it's really next on my list. Mm. You know, we're putting on a summit. Engage 2021 is our annual summit. We've got a really, you know, robust reg goal for that. And so that's a number, you know, we had to pick up all the speakers as a company, but marketing really drives that. So a lot of packaging, a lot of go-to-market. We just updated the pricing sheet. So their pricing has, you know, we have 600-700 SKUs somehow, and all of them, you know, half of them or a third of them get touched every month or two, and they have to be thought through and then updated.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, when you're looking at generating those market qualified leads, how connected are you in the handoff to the sales side of things? Like, is it fully automated where they're just booking on a calendar and then it's just kind of like, okay, it's not on my radar anymore? Or are you kind of seeing it all the way through to make sure that you're kind of bringing in the right people and the best people?
Yeah, I mean, any process that would have me involved, any process that repeats every hour and has me involved in it is not designed very well. So we have automated the leads that come in that are like request a demo, contact sales. Those are automated over to sales operations, and they get routed probably with a manual touch to the right AE to handle that. Yeah.
Interesting. And this is going a little outside of the scope of your role in the agency, but what, if you know off the top of your head, what is the outside of marketing? Obviously, marketing is a big way to generate leads. Are there any pure sales activities such as cold calling or outbound on LinkedIn, like things that more like a non-technical, more traditional salesperson might spend their time doing?
Are you asking, do we do that as a company or do we do that in my group?
As a company.
As a company, absolutely. We've got an outbound group that does outreach. We've got, you know, we do webinars once a month that we all work together as a team to invite people to, from blasting emails to doing LinkedIn. So there's definitely a lot of touch. I mean, I think every sales organization, every company strives to grow, and outreach is part of it. Some of the direct outreach we do in my group is the outreach for reviews, right? We've got to get kind of friendly and intimate with our customer, the happy customers, and then politely and persistently ask if, you know, they could provide us the reviews, so to help build reputation. So it's hands-on, it's automated, it's bulk, you know, we've got a really clean list. We're really careful about permission and letting people opt out if they don't want to hear from us. So we've got 99.7% deliverability. Mm-hmm. But one of the struggles with email lately is that Outlook is doing this focused and other box. So it's almost like a spam. It's not quite spam, but it's this second tier box that a lot of stuff will get filtered into if whatever their algorithm determines that it's not like first box for the focused. So I think you get deliverability, but email engagement over the years has been dwindling, in the same way that like engagement with, you know, the efficacy of TV ads is somewhat gets eroded with DVRs, with people being able to record and skip.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting watching the trajectory of the SMS world in terms of it becoming that, not just a transactional avenue, you're seeing people now sending out like webinar invites over through their SMS list. Are you guys playing around with that too, as you kind of see email getting harder to inbox?
You know, we have a very healthy business in Mexico, and our sales leader in Mexico has a WhatsApp list that she uses. And we haven't done an SMS per se. I'd say one of our more contemporary interruptive technologies that we use and that we provide to the customers are PWA pop-ups. So progressive web apps, when you program your website to be a progressive web app, you can do a little bit more personalization, and you could put, say, 5 different messages up. And when you perceive that persona or read that cookie, that you're going to pop them a message that's suited for them. It's not quite SMS. I haven't quite gotten there. I know that one of the things I was, I picked up at maybe a podcast or a webinar at BrightEdge was that doing the confirmation that you're coming to the demo, that you agreed to do a demo a week ago, and sending people a text. So it's not a solicitation per se, but it is a reminder, the way a restaurant would send you a reminder that your reservation's coming up in an hour, get in the car and get over here. And I find that to be kind of within bounds of things that wouldn't bother me if somebody did it to me, but I haven't done broadcast SMS yet. Have you, Andrew?
We have played with it. We haven't gone all in, just a lot of fear of the unknown. There are harsher penalties that I hear have actually been clawed back a bit, but yeah. Right now, like Twilio, for example, big leader in that space, is rolling out all kinds of like more verification and compliance to do with that. So like, I think we are going to see more crystal clear kind of ways to move forward, because they're working with all the major carriers and in and around the US and kind of the typical countries. So it will be interesting to see how things go, but I think at the end of the day, I think it will turn into just another channel, right? It's, you kind of saw that with email, right? It's like at first, like you're getting emails from your mom, right? And then, or you had like your work account, and now it's like you get emails from politicians and that pillow, the place that you bought that pillow from, and like everywhere, right? So I think, and we are seeing it, in my opinion, right now already, where the technology is starting to roll out to facilitate it even being a thing, right? Like you wouldn't have to go build custom technology to send texts now, right? Yeah. Whereas, so I think as that rolls out, there's going to be those leaders who kind of skirt the edge, where there's kind of that fear of the unknown. And it'll just get consumers and all of us will just get more and more used to it being a thing, to the point where it's kind of like email. It's like, it's just kind of accepted, right? It's not really like, it's not the end of the world if, or it's not shocking, I suppose, if somebody sends us a promotion, right?
Yeah, it's not. It's a little bit better than them giving you a cold call, because it's asymmetric in terms of the synchronicity, right? You don't have to pick up the text, but you can still get the value from it. But if somebody, you know, hits my cell phone during this podcast, you know, I really, really don't appreciate that interruption. That's going to be too disruptive. So you're right. I think it's going to be another channel, the way email became a channel, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how that evolves too. Cause like right now in its current format, text messages are typically one touch and they're gone, right? Like you don't really go back. You don't save text in the same regard that you would save an email, right? Like marking an email as unread, or notify me of this in 3 days or whatever, is a pretty common strategy, right? Whereas at least on the devices that I use, is there's none of that stuff there, right? So it'll be interesting to see what these tech providers are doing as we push forward, and seeing if like, if the interface changes, kind of like Gmail rolling out the promotions box, right? If that sort of stuff develops over time, or if they do kind of strictly keep it, because right now it is super invasive to get a text message, because it's just like, it's right there in your face, right? It's definitely cool to see all the digital marketing avenues evolving. Now, you did mention reviews a few times, so I do want to touch on that. Now, the sizes, I think you mentioned you had about 650 clients under the agency. Are these like organizations? Are these like multi-location companies? Are these single locations? Like, what is the breakdown of the type of client that you work with look like?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pyramid of clients. I think the pyramid of business, we work with, our roots are in the hotel business. So we'll work with a small regional hotel that's just one property, just one website, maybe 5-10 pages. That's kind of a base, you know, what they call a select hotel, like a Choice or a Comfort Inn. And we'll go all the way up to Marriott, and Marriott's going to be thousands of properties, and the pages that represent the local pages that represent those, and the modules that support them. And we work with US Bank, and US Bank is 5,000 locations. So when I say 650 customers, that's say the billing accounts, right? That's the different entities that we work with. And within those, we have 3,000 or 4,000 active websites, under management on the CMS.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. And then go ahead.
And where people aren't on the CMS, we are, you know, you can do a lot of interesting technical work by injecting into a third party site. And that's a good way to add quickly, kind of get into account, add value to what they're doing, and help their customers get that technique without doing a whole CMS rip out or a website redesign. And that's a product for the agency people listening to the podcast. We are making that available as a white label product. Some of those solutions are available to other agencies to license and redistribute to their customers, their community.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, that's a huge industry. White label solutions. That's our core exclusive market these days. It's just like, there's just so many agencies out there that are looking for these opportunities. Yeah. Now in terms of, so I imagine Google My Business would be a big player for you in terms of attracting potential business. Is that a correct assumption?
In terms of like, where do we get leads? Like what's our top of the funnel, or is our, in terms of a product solution that is good for business, or both?
That's a good question. In terms of generating qualified leads for you and your business.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Google, because of the emphasis on local and GMB, that when people are looking for an SEO agency, if you do that search in Northern California within, you know, 50, 60 miles of the office, we're going to show up really well. You know, if you do it in the Midwest, it's not going to be the same, because Google knows that our headquarters office is in Santa Clara. So we definitely get a lot of branded searches, people coming in either through the local or through the knowledge panel that comes up if they get our name as Milestone Inc., which is the evolution of our name. Our website is milestoneinternet.com. It's kind of our legacy name from, you know, 20 years ago. But Google My Business is a great generator of leads. But one of the things I've been conscious of lately, Andrew, is that to get things to come in organically, other channels have to help, right? For things to come in on brand, they have to have heard it from somewhere else. That could be paid, that could be social, it could be word of mouth. But during the pandemic, as you start to pull back, you see all the organic stuff start to pull back because it was actually derivative, which is one of the reasons when I quote some of the information on channel share that I'm going to put out in my next research report, is that I exclude the direct channel. Because the direct channel is dependent on another channel. It's not truly top of funnel in my book, because unless you have a URL, like when I was at mp3.com, people just looked for MP3s that way before the search engines were super adept. But otherwise, when they're looking for your name, they heard about it maybe through traditional media, maybe through PR, maybe through AR, maybe through a podcast. And people are hearing, you know, your brand name and coming in to see you. So it's still incumbent on marketing to look at the channel marketing mix really broadly, and to distribute the effort and the investment from the top of the funnel to the middle funnel to the bottom. Don't just invest your marketing effort on closing some deals that are already in the pipe. Mm-hmm. So did I answer your question on GMB? And of course, our GMB and local product and service offering is very robust. Yes.
Mm, gotcha. Awesome. And then, so in terms of the reviews that you guys are gathering, where, like, what might kind of my add on to that question is, like, where are you guys? Are you getting first party reviews for your agency, third party reviews? Are there specific platforms that you keep an eye on specifically?
Yeah, we're a software company. So we care about G2 Crowd and Trust Radius. And there's a new player called clutch.co that's, mm-hmm. And we kind of care about who shows up for the generic searches for the categories that we serve. And we look at those sites, and then we're driving reviews in there. Again, it's a somewhat new program for us. We've got lots of reviews on Google reviews, which helps a lot because it's very visible. But for the more in-depth RFPs and evaluations, people are digging down. And then our AR, our analyst relations, is a much bigger investment, and people will be, as we educate Forrester about our 16 solutions, Forrester will provide some endorsement and some access to its brand side buyers who are looking for information. So those are a couple of them. You know, some of the vertical, there's some vertical ones that are interesting, like Hotel Tech Report and auto review, auto services and vendor review sites that you need to get into in order to do your, what I call VBM, vertical based marketing. Even if you're not going to do account based marketing, like I'm definitely going after Toyota or GM, but if you're going after the industry generally, your material has to be segmented at least at the vertical level so that you're using the correct nomenclature and that you're showing up in the places they might look for you in the mid funnel kind of evaluation.
Yeah, I love that. And that's so true. You start talking to a dentist and you refer to their patients as customers, they've immediately tuned you out as just another marketer. Whereas if you're speaking that language and you're showing up in the places that they're going to look for information, that's definitely powerful.
Yeah, that's relevancy, right? I mean, if you think about what the Google algorithm has done over the last 25 years, you got to think as a marketing group, we've got to have the algorithm tuned to be relevant to what people are looking for, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that high level broad view that ultimately drills down to that very granular level from industry to industry. Now, in terms of, you have mentioned Forrester, are there specific relationships that matter to you in terms of generating qualified leads that you spend a lot of time thinking about or developing and nurturing? Or is it more so through digital marketing tactics and that sort of thing, webinars, funnels, whatever you want to call it, to generate these new business opportunities?
Yeah, it's a combination of quality and scale, and the more automation, the better. So of course, the biggest focus should be on SEO, because SEO, local and organic search together make up, when you exclude direct, they make about 65-70% of the traffic that comes to your website is essentially coming from Google, from those two channels. Mm. So creating content that is satisfactory to the algorithm and showing up, and you've got the great site experience with your core web vitals and your page speed, your page experience, your content stability is what Google's looking for. It gives you an advantage, right? It gives you more exposure and visibility. So that's the first place to start, is to create an ongoing thing. So this is a really easy tip for the audience. Sometimes over time, you realize you did well at Google when you weren't really trying. One of your blogs really takes off from, it might be from 2 years ago, but it's in first or second position and it's generating a lot of traffic. What you have to think backwards now and think, okay, now this is ranking. Let me refresh it. Let me tune it up a little bit, refresh it, show Google that it's been updated, which it'll see from reading the content and comparing it. It'll also see it from the router updates. And let me add some content here that is compelling. Let me do some things that might help it get into a featured snippet. So a numbered list, a bullet list, add some FAQs to the page. But most importantly, Andrew, add a piece of gated content to your best performing blog. So what does that mean? So if you look up Digital Marketing Roadmap, I'm going to rank really well for that. And so I realized people were looking for a roadmap. They were looking for a template. So after I realized that this blog had been doing well for years before I got to the company, I made a digital marketing roadmap, a template that's editable that people can download. So I get, maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 downloads a month of that particular item because I mapped it to where it was succeeding. So that's one way to get leads, right? That's a broad way. A more focused way in B2B is to, you're doing some form of paid, and you just have to get realistic about how much does it cost you to get a good appointment. How, you know, like for the kind of quality of conversation you and I are having right now for half an hour, an hour, is very valuable. And you have your marketing organization, your SDR organization, your AE organization, there's a lot of cost involved. So are you willing to invest, hundreds of dollars to get those leads from people who are aggregating leads of people who they say are in market? And that's a much more high quality one. You asked me earlier in the conversation, like how involved do I get? I sat in on 14 sales calls this week because I set up 19 sales calls and I sat in on 14 of them and I didn't say much. I just listened and it was super interesting. All my AEs did a great job, that the pitches were great, but I saw so many things that I could tune as the head of marketing, the head of messaging, that I could make it easier for them. And I could see what was landing. I could see which things I'd given them a year ago and a year and a half ago that they were still using because they had been working for them. So that's the high quality, super hands-on, executive time in the meeting, but time really well spent. And I have to balance my way from being in production and writing and, editing things to being in a meeting with you, being in a meeting with the customers, to be customer obsessed, right? How could I truly be customer obsessed if I don't listen to prospects and customers? on my product marketing team, they have KPIs that they have to attend 2 customer meetings per week. Mm. And they're learning a lot, right? And that helps them be better product marketers and helps them be more empathetic. One more note related to this is that Forrester this week said, you know, don't think of it as go to market. Think of it as go to customer, because you got to be that relevant. You got to be that on target with people. Don't just blah launch things to hear market, have my software, have my service. Nobody really wants that. Like, they want to hear how this can help your podcast, which is targeted at agencies. They want to hear that customization and targeting. So they've got a couple of frameworks that I've sort of retooled in my brain, like retooling my brain, that their personas, their operational personas, as opposed to demographic or technographic personas, it's like how they buy and how they think. And they say create micro-segmentation. And what I'm going to do is create micro-segmentation talk tracks that the salespeople will know all 4 of the micro-segment talk tracks. And once they really recognize which of the 4 they're talking to, they sort of jump slides, use a slightly different set of slides from the same deck, use slightly different talk track, use more or less data depending on where these people are showing up in this micro-segmentation. That's go to customer. That's customer obsessed, right? Or prospect obsessed, or, you know, future customer obsessed. So something I'm really excited about just really this week with some really great talks with Forrester.
Yeah, I love that. And I spent a lot of time thinking about that, where it's like, if you give the same presentation to every single person, you'll just start getting the same customer, and you might be tuning out a huge segment of the market that would otherwise buy from you if you actually gave them the right message. So I love how kind of in the trenches you are on that. And it's interesting with the team too. I'm just watching the time. We'll wrap up in a second here, but
sure.
The thing you said with the team, where it's like, sometimes, like, I find the opposite sometimes. There's like, sometimes you'll go in and you'll be like, oh, you're still using that? You shouldn't be using that, right? You kind of spun it in a positive way, but that goes both ways. Cause sometimes, like, the leadership really needs to come in and be like, this is what's working, like, right now, or this is like, maybe the messaging on the product has changed, but those old habits with the old messaging are still kicking around.
Yeah, it depends on how long they've been in the company and how long since you've been giving them new material. I've only been here 1.5 years, so nothing's too old right now.
That's funny. Awesome, man. Well, this has been a great, great episode. Why don't we wrap it up there? Anybody wants to get a hold or get your book, Amazon would be the best spot, right?
Absolutely. Hack the Corporate Fast Track at Amazon.
And we'll drop the link in the show notes. And yeah, thanks for coming on, man. It's been great.
Thanks, Andrew. I really enjoyed it. And regards to the audience, if anybody wants to find me on LinkedIn, please look for me, Eric Newton on /Eric Newton on LinkedIn, and mention Andrew's podcast so I know exactly where you came from.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll put that link in there as well.
All right.